Welcome to the View Tourism Podcast. I'm Coach Benton Williams. The View Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. My guest today is the CEO of the Kenya Tourism Board, Dr. Betty Radier. Dr. Radier does the post-mortem of the Novo Virtual Magical Kenya Travel Expo. She tells me they were encouraged by the participation of the travel trade and highlight the touch point of Kenya's restart strategy. Good morning and welcome to the podcast, and congratulations for hosting this novel event. And what's your impression so far? I mean, today is the final day, but what are the feedback you're getting from the trade and people who participated at the event?
Okay, so one of the things that the initial feedback that we're getting is that people are able to effectively conduct their meetings, because as you are aware, the primary reason for the expo is so that business to business people can meet. So if that doesn't work, then the challenge is people find that the expo has not met their expectations. So far, we haven't had any complaints around people being able to get on the platform, being able to fulfill their meetings, being able to reschedule and or adjourn their meetings or report it to our colleagues. So all of the technical aspects that allow for an effective meeting to happen are currently happening. So with the exception of the initial technical hitch in the media session, we haven't had any complaints so far. We will be doing an evaluation and research to just understand at the end of each day how many people have been on, have we had any incidences, and this is a report that we'll get probably later this morning for yesterday and on Thursday for today.
Okay, so with regards to engagement, and also knowing that obviously virtual events became, people were fatigued with it, did you get a sense that your planning and programming, suited the trade in terms of the time that you start up until the end?
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we've realized is actually going on this platform is people are fairly disciplined. So in an normal expo, you walk from one place to another for your meeting sometimes. Or a person is walking from one meeting to you. What we're finding that in terms of timekeeping and in terms of the program running, it's running very efficiently. So even in the opening yesterday, ordinarily you'd have an opening for maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours. Yesterday's was a fairly efficient and effective period of during the opening, because it started on time and then finished on time. So that's one of the aspects that we're finding. That's not to slight the fact that it's always great when people can meet. But one of the things that we put on the platform is an opportunity for people to see each other, an opportunity for people to profile each other and set up their profile way before the meeting time, so that it is one of those things that you're not able to necessarily meet the person, especially if it's a new partner that you're meeting, but you've had as much as possible an opportunity to understand who it is that you're going to be meeting.
You've seen the thing reigniting the magic of travel.
Yeah.
Perfect. Now, with respect to Kenya, and yesterday when I listened to you when you talked about how you're preparing to restart tourism, and the CS also spoke about the vaccination drive and the fact that you want to expand the Magical Kenya Travel Expo in itself. What are the touch points in your restart agenda of Kenya?
So the first touch point for us, there were strategic touch points, and then there were technical and practical touch points. So in the strategic, let me start with the strategic one. So the first thing that we did is we unpacked our strategy. We threw out the one that we literally just packed the one that we had before and engaged, as the CS had alluded to, McKinsey, and had a full 8 to 10 week session, both with trade, with private sector, with key stakeholders, to just review where the destination is, where travel and hospitality is, and the impact of the pandemic. And through that, we were able to build what we believe is a fairly robust strategy that is going to take us forward, at least in the next year. The one thing that we are cognizant of is today your strategy needs to have that flexibility room that is able to address any challenges that you come across. So, for example, initially people had the view that by March this year, people would be traveling, expos would have returned, meetings would have returned. But as you can see, challenges around destinations still putting in place policies as relates to the different waves that come around. Travel really hasn't opened up. In fact, it's just the other day that we got off the red list for the UK. And that, as you know, has been one of our key source markets. So on the strategic part, one of the things that we have had to understand is you have the basic framework of the strategy of what you intend to happen with timelines along it. But you must have the strategy must be a live document in terms of being able to adapt to any new challenges that you face along the way. So that's on the strategic side. Over and above that, we've looked seriously at our domestic market and our regional market to get a good understanding on how to fully unlock that potential. Some of the challenges that we have identified is obviously access, policies around borderless travel. It's value in terms of perception on the value or cost of a destination. So those are some of the things that we have sought to address with partnerships, especially where access is concerned. So through airlines, through rail, through road, and that sort of thing. Then on the technical side, it's a multi-agency approach because it entails a partnership between Ministry of Health, Interior, and Tourism. Interior looks after all our immigration, and Health, as you know, looks after the entire health sector and understanding and foreign affairs as well. And the way we've unpacked that is we have a multi-agency committee that meets, headed by our CS, that unpacks the different aspects of impact from the policies that we put in place as relates to travel and hospitality. And therefore, you remember when earlier on in the pandemic, most people arriving in the destination had to quarantine in a government institution. You'll find that with the exception of, I think, three destinations, all other destinations don't have to follow the protocol that says you're quarantining in a government institution. There are some destinations that have a seven day self-quarantine requirement, but by and large, the travel locator form and the contact tracing form has been put in place to ensure that people arrive in the destination and can immediately begin to experience the destination. There's also been a rollout of ability to conduct testing, especially along the tourism circuit, for visitors that are in destination and need to have a negative PCR test, a 96-hour negative PCR test post exit of the destination. So that whole, and at this point, it's gotten to a point where the partnerships are with labs that are able to go to the hotels where the guests are staying, and the test can be conducted there, so that the disruption for the traveler is minimized, and therefore makes the destination a lot more attractive in terms of people wanting to come to destination.
Staying on the vaccination side a bit, do you have in terms of numbers, the tourism sector, the percentage of the industry that have been, inoculated?
Okay, so what I have specifically is the initial drive for the first vaccination. Yeah, the first dose, where through, again, our ministry, were able to get 5,000 doses for the industry. And that, by and large, covered a huge number of people in the industry. But remember, the Magical Kenya Travel protocols required that your staff be vaccinated before they came back to work. There's the discussion that says there needs to be an audit around following that requirement. The first dose, most of the people within the tourism sector were able to take the first dose because it was one of the requirements for return to work. you'll understand that the second dose is currently being administered, and with the challenges around availability of vaccines that keep coming in, there's a drive by government to actually drive vaccination now for the second dose and some people who are currently taking the first dose. But I don't have the numbers, aside from the drive that we had much earlier on in the year, where we had an appeal for up to 5,000 doses for the industry, and we conducted that.
I was saying that you'd be an active, participant and voice at the CEO's forum where we talked about Brand Africa and all of that. Yesterday, you did your media briefing. You touched on why Magical Kenya obviously also, afford the continent the opportunity to drive, that agenda.
Yes.
What is it that Kenya, as a big bloc, not just in East Africa, but in Africa, can do also to push the narrative?
Okay, so the experience, thanks, Kojo. So the experience we have with opening up borders and partnering with different states, especially for tourism and travel, the experience that we have is obviously with the East African Tourism Platform that encompasses Uganda and Rwanda. Tanzania is a partner but has not signed up to that yet. But when we look at Brand Africa, the sorts of conversations we've been having is actually three-pronged. The first one is, there's a need for states at a fairly high level to come together and embrace the fact that there's an opportunity for Africa, especially in the travel and hospitality sector, for us to be able to build and drive that, unlock that opportunity and that potential. Third one is largely around policies and that drive and govern access. Every Africa meeting you go to talks about the Yamoussoukro agreement, which has never been unlocked. There's conversations that can be had about that for a number of years going on, but the discussions have been that if airlines, for example, key airlines within the continent can have a conversation that says, what are the opportunities that we as airlines have in terms of partnering, the same way that people have code shares internationally, to ensure that you unlock destinations and you unlock scale for people to be able to travel. So if that can be unlocked and buttoned down, especially as relates to the taxes that are charged from one destination to another within the continent, then it very quickly eases what is an Achilles heel for the continent being attractive as a Brand Africa offering. You'll imagine that today, me traveling from here, say to West Africa, is probably costs me more than traveling from here to Europe. So, and we're in the same continent. If by extension you compare that to, say, traveling within Europe and what the European Union has been able to do for that, there's no comparison at all. We need to come to the point where we're able to have a model that first of all makes the concept viable, the concept of Brand Africa viable, and then we must have consensus by different destinations, and I think that's the easier part, at least the key destinations, about what each destination wants to, a positioning that each destination feels lends itself to what their ethos from a tourism or from a brand perspective. So once that is sorted, then the issue around creating a borderless continent is possible, because this is something that is of interest to trade, it is of interest to foreign affairs, it is of interest to health and a lot of other industries. And people currently are undertaking that movement with the challenges that are in place. So that would be a much easier agenda to fulfill.
Okay. Finally, as CEO of the Kenya Tourism Board, and as you, I call it a dress rehearsal of this virtual event for next year's event, probably 10 years or a decade of, MKT, where do you want to take MKT to? And how do you intend to even grow it? What are your strategy to make MKT not just Africa, but a mass visit trade show in the world?
Okay. So because we have the benefit of looking at how shows grow, and we've watched the way MKT started from 50 exhibitors to now over 200, over 160 exhibitors and over 200 buyers coming onto the show. One of the things we as a destination need to do is almost approach this expo with an open palm that allows our partners within the region to feel part of the expo and feel that there's benefit in participating in this one central expo from the perspective of what their business objectives are, what their destination objectives are, and just the opportunity that from a business to business, to the point that says we need to expand the destination, we need to expand the continent, and a show like this has the potential of doing that. So once we get to that point, then we start to move into the area and into the realms of becoming an international show and not just an Africa show. It breaks down the barrier of this is an Africa show to a position where you start off possibly from a regional continent show. So maybe us and Dubai, or us and Middle East, or us and at least a continent that's close by to us. And then it expands like that. We must first make sure that within Africa, the destinations in Africa acknowledge the show as being, having the gravitas and the impact and the quality in terms of interaction that they're looking for from a show, whether it be in Kenya or be in any other market that they go to shows for. If it's over 10 years, so we can't in the next 10 years do the same thing. We need to now look and see how do we open up these shows and from other partners within the continent that on how it is that we can help to bring value to those destinations through this show.
Now, I was saying that can we conclude that next year's show is going to be a hybrid show, or it will just be a presential show?
Okay, so so one of the things that I mentioned when we talked about the strategy is that we must have a strategy that is a live event. So at the moment, we are determined to have a live expo next year. But as we go along, if, for example, we have a fifth or a sixth or a seventh wave, which we don't really know, then we may need to be considering a hybrid. You see what I'm saying? So in our minds, we are gearing up to celebrate physically our 10th, but it will be our 11th or 12th year with a physical show next year. But as we have been taught now, we are students of uncertainty. Depending on what happens with this pandemic, what is the level of vaccination, how it is that countries do protocols, how it is that we are prepared, we may need to reconsider that.
What's your final word for the tourism sector, people who are just prone on, vaccine hesitancy or the conspiracies around, vaccination? Because we know that it's only vaccine that can help us at least, get back to some form of normalcy as a tourism leader.
I think the final word would be travel will return. It will return, possibly not at a high pace, but it will return. We must have the confidence to take the initial step with the protocols that are in place and the sensitivity as individuals to remain safe in order for us to reopen up our industry. We cannot be panic-stricken or scared and say, I am going to wait until I'm sure that everybody else has been vaccinated before I ever step out. We already see people moving out, we're seeing continents even holding physical shows successfully. So as a leader in this industry, I believe this industry will recover. It is resilient and it will recover.
Thank you, Dr. Betradia, and congratulations for hosting this Made in Show.
Thank you, Kojo.